But ultimately, what I wanted to talk about today is it's about a podcast episode, but it's not. It's really just what it represents more than anything, because like we're talking like third hand about a situation, so it's less about the situation and more about what the host said about it, but even more about what that represents in the larger culture. So Elise, you're here now. I assume that you might be able to speak.
Yes. I think I can.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the first time I've talked to you since I actually saw you, so that's different. So I don't want to, like, it's not so much to put people on blast, because I don't even know who those other people were. I mean, it's written on the podcast, but, like, I don't care. But we met through a podcast.
Well, yeah, we met through the Discord server for a Patreon for a podcast, which is kind of a silly thing to say, but that's the reality of the situation. And this is technically about the response that a host and a guest host had to a Reddit story that it wasn't, it's Am I the Asshole, because they don't do any other subreddits, right? They just do Am I the Asshole?
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, there's, yeah. And it was one of those that, like, when you see the title, you're already kind of like, ugh, this could go really badly. And then it was, like, the more that I kept listening, I was like, I'm folding in on myself, like, with secondhand embarrassment and like, anger.
I mean, like, the situation was bad, but it was more or less what it said, right?
Yeah, like, no, the situation was what it said, and absolutely.
Yeah, and it reminded me when I was on the show, and, like, I always wonder, when you get a really quote-unquote obvious title, is it going to be that, or is it going to be, like, a twist?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, the one that they asked me was something like, am I the asshole for being quote-unquote racist? And I'm like, oh, so it must not be racist. No, it was racism, right?
Yeah.
And then this one, the situation, and I don't really care about we don't have to put a link in or anything, so I'm just putting this up immediately. It's just,
Let me find the title, actually.
Well, it was Hiding My Daughter's Autism from Her.
I mean, yeah, Am I the Asshole for Hiding My Daughter's Autism from Her?
Right, like, you know, there might be some prepositions that are different, but that's what the situation was. And the situation itself, just describe it briefly, because then you can describe what the response was basically, I believe this is the father, yes, said that his daughter was diagnosed with ADHD at age 4.
Autism at age 4, but yeah.
No, I thought it was autism at age 9.
Oh.
I think it was ADHD at age 4, and they're not sure if that's still true or if that was a misdiagnosis, right?
Okay, got it. Okay.
But then she was officially diagnosed with autism at age 9, and that's when they decided not to tell her. They didn't tell her about the ADHD either, right?
Yeah.
And that's bad enough. But then at age 14, basically she figured it out. She saw some medical records, but, like, not only did she see some medical records, but, like, because if I see some medical records about me, it would have to make sense for me to figure it out, right? Like, if it's just, like, a list of medical things, I don't know what it means. But then putting it together with her experiences, she basically was like, oh, she had the light bulb a lot of us get when they're diagnosed. And she realized that all these things she'd internalized about herself were, you know, not her fault, so on and so forth, and people being mean to her because of neurodivergent traits. And the father is wondering, and to be clear, it wasn't just him. I'm not excusing him, but, like, the mother also was a big part of the decision, right? She said, like, we shouldn't tell her because of stigma, blah, 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 blah. I don't really want to go too much into that, not because it doesn't matter, but because it's just sort of boring and sad. Like, it's like a sad kind of boring. It's like,
yeah, it's mundane and sad.
You know, like, so, and this is not to excuse what they did, but to me, it's more about the sort of general populace, one degree off representation of neurodivergence that was exemplified by the discussion that we are talking about, because we're not the Am I the Asshole podcast to be talking about the situation. That's what the Discord is for. We had our discussion in there, and you know, we did what we did. But well, if you want to describe what they said.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was a, because at first, after they read it out, because they read what I assume was the whole post, so they sometimes do make edits just for, like, brevity and clarity purposes, but they read, they got the bulk of the information out, even if it was edited. And the guest in question, I have never heard of this man before, but through the discussion, I gathered that he had a sibling. I don't know if he was younger or older, who was diagnosed with autism and who apparently had pretty severe autism, very high support needs autism, autism that I think a lot of people would kind of, when they think of autistic people, is what they think of, you know, borderline nonverbal, acting extremely inappropriate ways in public. And the first thing said from my, because I listened to it today, and obviously I missed some details, but the discussion afterward is what really stuck with me. The first thing that they said was, this is a tough one. And that really got me, because I don't think that this is the kind of thing where there is, like, any wiggle room.
And yeah, I heard that, and that was,
and
like,
I was like, oh, dear God, please
and
no.
I had about 30 more seconds, and I honestly don't remember anything after that. Well, they said, this, you know, it's, I feel bad for the parents, and I'm like, nope.
This isn't about them. Nope. It's really not. So as that conversation continued, obviously I don't have the precise transcript of it lodged in my brain, but I remember that as the conversation went on, there was a focus on the fact that the daughter was bullied in school and how this would have happened anyway. She probably would have been bullied even if she had been diagnosed. And I was like, just kind of to myself, I was like, why is the fact that she was bullied so relevant here? Not sure. Like, sure, it was mentioned, but I don't really know if that has any bearing on whether or not the parents would have told her. And there was also, at some point, a further discussion of, like, what the diagnostic terms of autism spectrum disorder are. And there was a mention of Asperger's disorder, which was described as, like, more for people who have social quirks, and I'm using air quotes when I say that, and, like, listen, if I'm going to be fully honest with myself and with whoever's listening to this, I have a younger brother who was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, not otherwise specified, when he was about as young as you can be for an autism diagnosis, because a lot of the symptoms of autism are just being a small child. And you have to reach a certain point developmentally for that to be classified as something else rather than just being a small child. But for my brother, I believe the diagnosis process, because it is a process, I would also like to make that, it is long and it is expensive and it is emotionally and physically draining for autistic people and for people with ADHD to be evaluated. And that's another point that these parents also robbed their daughter of time and money if she needs to be re-diagnosed in the future, because they buried this in her paperwork. But so from as long as I can remember of my brother existing, because he was formally diagnosed when he was like 2.5 years old, which is extremely young. And I am 4 years older than him, so I was 6 at the time. Autistic people have been part of my life, you know. And because of that, I have had to unpack and unlearn a lot of language that was considered, you know, progressive and considered accurate at the time, including, like, low-functioning and high-functioning and, you know, just colloquial terms that were used around autistic people. Phrases like, everyone's on the spectrum, which was also said at some point. And a lot of these things, as somebody who also has a sibling with autism, divergent myself, but not autistic and not to the degree that he is, like, it's not that I don't understand the things that the guest hosts were saying, of course, especially from the perspective of somebody who is neurotypical witnessing an autistic sibling, but it was just like a level of like secondhand embarrassment, because it's like, it's not that I don't understand the place he's coming from. I completely do. You know, I've been there in so many ways, but it doesn't mean that you, as the sibling of somebody who has autism, gets to speak for that person or gets to these words to other people, especially when you're not neurodivergent yourself. It just comes off as like, it comes off as like just patronizing and unnecessary. And like, I don't know how old this man was. It's entirely possible that he's in his late 30s, early 40s, and just straight up doesn't know that these terms are. But you owe it to your brother and to other people with various neurodevelopmental disorders to keep up to terminology and to advocate for them in the most accurate way you can. And saying things like, well, everyone's on the spectrum, which is not true. That's not how spectrums work. That's like saying that, like, gamma radiation is on the visible light spectrum because it's a spectrum. Like, it's the visible light spectrum. It's the spectrum of visible light. It's not the spectrum of everything, you know? Like, it's called the autism spectrum because it's the spectrum of people's experiences who are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. The brain spectrum is probably an accurate term if we're going to talk about that, but that's not what people say when they say the autism spectrum. And like, never.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, I was just going to say that, like, a lot of this conversation played into, like, the delegitimization of the experiences of people with autism who are, who have lower support needs, and saying that they're not really autistic or their autism is not as relevant to their lives, and that being diagnosed with autism is not something that is important to know and be aware of. There was also kind of a lot of quote-unquote discussion of, like, treatment of autism that I found, like, questionable and really uncomfortable to overhear. The guest host mentioned that his brother was taken to a functional medicine doctor, and was brought up somehow, which really put my body on edge as somebody who listens to Maintenance Phase. Just like, fear was filled with, like, my body was filled with fear. And there was mentions of a GF-CF diet, gluten-free, casein-free diet, which is a pseudoscientific method of treating autism with the premise that the gut health is what is actually causing autism or is making it worse, which, for people who are not completely unaware, the whole reason why Andrew Wakefield's fraudulent study on autism was what it was because he was a gastroenterologist who was paid to come up with a link between vaccines and autism, and decided to do by proposing a non-specific colitis in the gastrointestinal systems of children with autism, which is why these things are so harmful. And it's not that I blame the guest host for parroting these things, because that's of course what you do when you're in a space like that, when you're involved in a space like that, and when you're not completely in touch because you're not a member of it, but you're just, you know, in the orbit of these circles, and when you don't update yourself. And what just frustrates me deeply is that I love my brother so much, and I want to give him the best advocacy that I can when it's appropriate. And I want to talk about him with as accurate of language as I can. And I'm not claiming anything about how the guest host feels about his brother. That's absolutely not what I want to do in this situation. It just feels, it feels hurtful and disingenuous to be represented as the sibling of somebody with autism in this situation with terminology and language and analogies that I find hurtful, not only as a neurodivergent person, but as somebody who loves and cares for somebody who is autistic.
You know, I don't try to speak for people who are in a different situation for me. Part of the reason that I get frustrated with a lot of academic and scholarly research is because I think that a lot of people speak for people who aren't in their position, or more accurately, they'll try to make a broad argument statistically that tries to encompass everything, and that's an issue. But on the other hand, like, a lot of my writing about neurodivergence is very honestly, I think, and directly from my position as someone who, I don't know what the best terms are, but, like, for it to be possible for me not to be diagnosed until I was 35, right? Like, there's obviously a lot of racism and stuff involved in that, but, like, I'm not a child where it would have been obvious at age 2, 3, 4, right?
Yeah.
Or, I'm not a child. You know what I mean? I wasn't a child. And so the people in the book that I have coming out, we were all people of color who, you know, when you read the book, you see that there were so many signs, but the signs were more emotional, subtle, et cetera. So I don't try to speak for people who are having a lot more differences from everybody else. And so I think that what you mentioned there about people who are, whether we want to frame it as lower support needs or whatever, is it is not to say that we don't have needs that aren't being met, right? And I'm not trying to claim that this is harder than other situations. I'm just saying that it's when I was in the process of getting evaluated and I had to go just pay for it myself because they're not going to cover it unless you're a child in school, basically.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling people about some of the symptoms or traits, I should say, that I was having, and people would be like, well, I don't like doing things I don't want to do either. And I'm like,
yeah, no, like, and I've talked about this, like, very briefly, I think, before, that I was basically hyperlexic when I was a kid, and nobody asked or think about what that meant for me. Because I was a white child, like, not even just a white child, I was a white female child. I don't think that was even, like, considered, and because some autistic, like, I just said autistic, whatever. So many of my neurodivergent traits were considered, like, beneficial to me that nobody, I think, even thought about it. And I think that must be the situation with the daughter, right? Because, like, if we're being extremely frank here, if she had the kind of autism that it seems that the guest host's brother experiences, or if she experienced autism more like my younger brother does, there would have been absolutely no option to hide it from her. There's no option to do that. And it feels even somehow even like more infantilizing and strange that they would do this when their daughter presumably has a lower level of support and experiences autism in a way that less impacts her daily life. Because it seems like there is such an obsession within autism parents and, like, the archetype of autism moms that have a normal child, a quote-unquote normal child. And, it seems like these set of parents were, for all of their talk of not wanting to contribute to the stigma, with not wanting to tell somebody that they're diagnosed with autism because they're afraid that it will make their life harder, is stigma. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't understand.
It's kind of nonsense, honestly. They're telling themselves that, but the reality is that they are being ableist and infantilizing their daughter.
Get away with it. Just on a just practical level, like, her being diagnosed, especially at her age. Right?
As a woman, as a girl.
Yeah, but I'm saying especially at the age she's at. Where she's like 14, right? And I don't mean when they diagnosed her. I just mean the age she's at in the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
The kids are going to perceive her how they're going to perceive her. The diagnosis and informing her, the only thing it can do is give her power.
Yeah.
Right? Because the kids are going to perceive her how they're going to perceive her.
I know.
Right? And they're not gonna treat her. It's not like the kids are going to make fun of her because they don't know. And then they find out she's autistic and they're going to be like, oh, let me not make fun of her.
Yeah. Like, and the thing is that they said that it's not even that she was bullied. She was lied to and gaslit by her peers.
Right.
Like, you realize that autistic, that people can tell when you're autistic, you know? Like, it's not like being autistic is something that, and obviously they literally say in the story that she forced herself to mask to avoid being bullied and harassed and abused by her peers because they could tell that she didn't have the same level of social cues as everybody else, and therefore they could get away with doing those things to her and gaslighting her. And it's like, there seems to be no self-awareness at all that what they have done has actually only caused further problems for her and has, like, completely deprived her of resources and access to help that would have, like, and, I mean, again, another thing. Within this conversation, there was a discussion of, like, working on skills, which is a concept that is talked about within neurodivergent communities, because there are skills, quote-unquote, like, that neurodivergent people struggle with that can actually be worked on to cope with them, right? I think one of the things that was mentioned was not liking being in crowds, and then the other one was hand flapping when you get excited or upset. And, like, as somebody who stims, that did piss me off. Like, I don't need to work on shaking my fist when I eat something I like. That's just something I do. And it just seemed to, like, really reflect a lack of understanding that it's not that autistic people or neurodivergent people are just acting a certain way for fun. They're doing that because they don't know how else to process the information that they're receiving.
Or it's the most comfortable way to process it.
Exactly. And because that's the way that they want to process it. And, like, focusing on something as objectively innocent and like, neutral as hand flapping in that situation and not liking being in crowds, it just feels like assimilationist language. Is that the right word to use, I guess?
Yeah, that's
like,
exactly what it
is. I mean, yeah, like...
That's part of what I talk about in my writing is and I don't always use the same language, but it's just like, you know, I get sad sometimes when, and I've said this to you before, but I don't know that I've said this on here. I probably have. I don't remember what I say. But some of the things that are really praised about me now are different from what was praised about me as a kid. Because these days, it's not that impressive to memorize stuff when you have the internet at your fingertips, right? You know, like, if you...
Nobody cares how fast I can read at this point.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
like, they might find the things that I know to be interesting, but it's not the fact, it's not the number of things that I know, right? Like, if someone cares about subways and I tell them about it, they'll be interested because they care about that subject, not because I have so many things in my head, right? But now, what I'm really, I don't want to say good at, but what comes easy to me is I do a lot of things really fast, right? And people are always like, how do you get these things done so fast? How do you get things done so fast? And it's not everything, but it's, but I've gotten to my point in my career and life where, with certain exceptions, I can structure things so that I put myself in the position to succeed most of the time. Not always. But okay. And I'm only really good at these things going really fast because I forced myself 19 years ago, and I remember the day when I was 19, when I was doing very poorly in college, and I had to turn myself from a procrastinator into somebody who did things really early. And I do things really fast now out of a latent anxiety that if I ever don't do that, I'll stop being able to get anything done. And so the things that make me exceptional now are mostly what my evaluator called compensation mechanisms for what used to happen when I was younger. Now, to be clear, these things do come easily to me. It's not made up. Right? But it's all born out of traumatic emotional and functional experiences. And I do wish, in a lot of ways, that this sort of middle ground where the daughter is, where you are, where I am, which is not to diminish where your brother is and where this person's brother probably is, right? And I'm very, I try to be careful with that, because I don't want to diminish that experience, but I also don't think that the people in that position are going to be mad at me, but I just want to be clear. Because people, and they mention like the good doctor and stuff like that. And again,
oh, once they said the good doctor, I was like, we have to, this is horrible. Like, and I understand that the good doctor is a canonically autistic character, but at what cost, genuinely? Like, I don't think anybody is benefiting. Not that everybody has to, quote-unquote, benefit from representation, because representation does not necessarily have to intrinsically be positive. And there are, like, members of any group that are, that exist and have negative on society, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. However, the fact that the first and, like, one of the only examples of a canonically autistic character that people do is a savant syndrome white dude who's most well known within the show for having crying fits that screw up his face to the point that he looks crazy, and also, like, for using his autism as an excuse to be transphobic in an episode of this medical drama. Like, I don't know. I think the Asperger's thing is what really, like, snagged in my brain and, like, got me in terms of the conversation, like, made me upset or, like, angry with the direction that it was going. The combination of, like, the mention of the diet, like, the use of outdated language, mentioning examples that are really, relevant, and then also constantly defending the parents in the situation, which I guess kind of brings us to maybe one of my least favorite aspects of the entire discussion, when they went into the comments, which took them a pretty long time. They probably spent like half an hour talking about this, I think. They went into the comments and read a comment from somebody who basically said, "You are an enormous asshole. You have irreparably damaged your relationship with your daughter. I genuinely don't think I can keep saying what I want to say because the subreddit will ban me." So this is somebody who is justifiably really upset by what's been described in this post. And the guest host immediately said that this person is a keyboard warrior who probably doesn't have any children. And ended discussion by saying that the commenter was the only asshole in the situation. And the bullies. The bullies and the commenter are the only assholes, and the parents didn't do anything wrong.
No. I don't understand why people think that it's hard to have children. It's hard to raise children. And I understand that. I'm not trying to pretend childbirth is easy. But, like, if there's one thing species have been doing since species have been species, it's creating offspring. So you don't have to be anybody to have a child.
No, there's no test that they make you take.
Yeah,
you don't. I could have a child tomorrow, and that would be terrible.
And
but
I
just
want to imply there should be a test because we get that.
No, that would be but eugenics. Asperger's. It's all coming back.
No, absolutely. I understand that if people listen to this, and when I say here and in my writing that, like, experience, especially from a marginalized community, is unfortunately going to be the most authentic form of expertise, people will say, well, why wouldn't that be true of parenting? And what I would say in response to that is that I do understand how that could seem hypocritical. I understand on the face of it how that could seem that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, people have studied raising children. There's many, many things about it written by people from many perspectives, and that doesn't mean it's perfect. but there has not been nearly as much from us about us. And until we get to the point where there's a significant portion of the work about us that's by us and for us, then, simply put, we are going to be the evidence. We're going to be the research and the experts. And you do need for us to combine our experience and expertise with people with different expertises to say, like, yeah, if you are experienced being a neurodivergent, it doesn't make you a nutritionist, right? To just talk about one aspect of things. So you should probably talk to someone who has that expertise, right? But, like, I'm not saying you need that to be both Wakefield. I'm just saying, like, talking about various things that people say around neurodivergence. No. Being neurodivergent does not make you an expert on food, inherently. But being an expert on food does not make you an expert on neurodivergence. It doesn't equal, you know, it doesn't equal. So, to sort of tie this off, I mean, like, I don't want to... I'm not as angry as I used to be a few years ago, you know, before I knew you. And I didn't listen to the whole thing, so that helps. But mostly it just makes me sad. What they said is unfortunate and harmful.
Yeah.
But to me it's more of a representation of not even the people who are openly hostile to us, right? I'm not saying people like that don't matter, but that's never been my concern with my work as a researcher, as a writer. It's the people who really think they're doing the right thing. And I don't mean it in like a Christian conservative doing the right thing way. Like, that's, everybody thinks they're doing the right thing, but I truly mean people who think they're being progressive, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
And who are listened to, because if you're a neurotypical person who doesn't have much experience with autistic people, specifically people with autism who have high support needs, of course your first instinct is to listen to the sibling of a person with those needs, because they seem to have the most first-hand experience, and that's often very true. And many people with high support needs can't communicate their experience to you. But, and I think part of the reason that that comment annoyed me so deeply, not the comment that the person on the post made, but the comments made about the comment itself, the discussion I had about the comment, is from my perspective, from what I can understand, more than likely that the person who commented is autistic. And to say that this person's opinion essentially doesn't matter and they're just an angry person behind a keyboard because they probably don't have kids, my question is, why on earth does the perspective of a parent matter more than the perspective of anyone else? Because this isn't necessarily even a question about parenting decisions. This is a question about whether or not these parents in this situation, but this could be anybody, respect their daughter enough to disclose something about her that's really important and could have a large impact on her life and clearly has had a large impact on her life. And then the crazy thing is at the very end, the regular host, she said that when she was in high school and applied to colleges, her parents hid rejection letters from her and didn't tell her that she got rejected. And she said that she felt violated and betrayed by that. And it's like, yeah. Yeah, like you as a child, even as a young child, deserve to know things about yourself and to know things and to be told things in an age-appropriate manner. And I mean, again, on that front, when she was about 9, apparently she asked her parents what autism was, or like they maybe explained it to her because she had to go get diagnosed with it or had to go through that evaluation process, and they just told her that it was a different way of thinking.
I want to know what she thought was happening.
I know, because maybe she went through all that process and maybe they just told her like, oh yeah, they just thought that you had that. Because I guess the whole point of this is that they were lying by omission at the very least, which is bad enough, honestly, because like, again, by not disclosing, because to get her any kind of accommodations or a 504 or an IEP, this would have needed to be discussed with her present and her in the room, and they would have needed to give her medical records to the school. There would have been no way to get her accommodations without her being fully aware of it. So, like, fuck those parents, frankly, for making their daughter go without proper accommodations for their own, like, desire to have a normal child and their own fear of stigma that they are personally creating. Like, they either straight up did not explain to her what was going on in that situation, which is really awful, or they straight up lied to her and said, oh yeah, they thought you might have this thing, but you don't, which is flat out lying to their child. Which is going to, I'm sorry, irreparably damage your relationship with them. Like, the commenter was completely right. I can't imagine being in that position and knowing that my parents found an aspect of myself so shameful and potentially harmful to me that they hid it from me for years. Like, yeah, I can't imagine being in that position.
I mean, that's why, with myself, my parents didn't know. And this is the 90s, right?
Yeah.
So, because I didn't have the high support stuff going on, it's just not an assumption you would make, right? So that I really feel the institution put me down. And, you know, in a way, I don't even have nearly as much anger for the kids who teased me as I expected that I would, because I really think it's up to the adults to protect you. And I'm not blaming my parents at all. I'm not saying my parents never made any mistakes, but they didn't make any mistakes like me either. They didn't know I had. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if the school didn't know to diagnose me, which I'm not necessarily saying it's an excuse, but, like, I can see why they may have been slow on that one. They had to know that I was struggling, and because so much of people's humanity is tied up in perceptions of intelligence, which is a big part of if you exhibit certain signs of it, then you're normal enough. And if you don't, then
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, it's not even that you're, like, quote-unquote normal enough. It's that you're, like, special and extra good, which is what really makes the internalized feelings of, like, loathing and self-hatred and despair and procrastination really difficult to deal with, because I grew up alternately, this is going to sound so fucking annoying, and I need to be allowed to speak. I grew up alternately being, like, praised for being pretty or praised for being smart. Those were my two sources of validation as a child. And I was like, if I don't have one, what does that mean about me? If I'm just pretty, then I'm vapid and stupid and that's not good. And if I'm just smart, then I get no social validation from my peers. And, like, obviously the pretty thing has nothing to do with ADHD, but, like, I felt like I didn't have my intelligence anymore, quote-unquote didn't have my intelligence anymore, when I was struggling in school, when my grades were bad, when I was losing so many papers because I would just forget them in my backpack, when I didn't have a pencil most days. I just didn't feel like I had a personhood anymore. Which is, like, I can't on anything. It's not like I had an ADHD diagnosis and my parents hid it from me, you know? That I know about. I've combed through my medical record for fun. There's no ADHD diagnosis in there. But I also can't help but feel a level of, like, grieving and sadness for the child who didn't know that these things were not wrong with me. They just were. That I wasn't struggling with everything else because I was worse, because I was stupid, because I had another issue that was my fault that I needed to resolve. And I feel so much empathy and also so much anger for the girl in the story, and also for, like, the hundreds of other people that this happens to. Like, I think I've heard of at least, like, 4 or 5 other instances just being on the internet of people's diagnoses being hidden from them.
and, like, I don't know, like, realizing that I had ADHD was a key aspect of coming to terms with my personhood and, like, who I am, and I'm also very grateful that it coincided with, like, me being 18 and already developing a broader sense of my personhood, but, like, that should have come much earlier. And for that girl, it did come much earlier, but her parents chose to deprive her of it. It's pretty bad. I don't know. Like, that's all I have to say, really.
Yeah, what you said about the grief for the person, I mean, that's what sort of... When that first book, which I wrote before the diagnosis, well, mostly before, it wasn't about that. I said I was neurodivergent, but I didn't write ADHD, so I had been diagnosed yet, so I just didn't want to be specific. But it wasn't about that. And there's a lot of anger in there at various institutions that have nothing to do with ADHD. And that book is funny, but, you know, this book and my current string of research, there's more pride. I feel less insecure in my writing, but ultimately, sometimes being angry feels pointless because I can't help the years that I felt that way. Like, I can't undo it. I can heal as an adult, but, like, I remember, like, the story I posted in the chat and that I've written in the book. Like, I remember how that felt to the point where I almost didn't let myself feel anything, because if you take a step back and think about your teacher embarrassing you because they're annoyed, like, why would you ever do that to a child? And I'm a teacher, right? And I teach adults, but I taught children, and, like, it's not, to me, everybody loses their shit, right? So, if he had done that, and then the next day he had thought it wouldn't make it okay, but, like, I'm like, yeah, he's an adult, you know, things happen, right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite things was, I had a teacher who was teaching us suffixes in grammar, so she wrote human with a plus sign and then ITY for, like, humanity, and this kid who probably had ADHD, actually, goes, humanity. She
Listen. If you even say a word that is vaguely sexual, possibly maybe in front of middle schoolers, you are going to get, I don't know what to tell you. Sometimes in seventh grade, I couldn't look at the word organism laughing because it looks like orgasm. That's just how it is being 13 years old. I don't know.
So, like, but he's the one that said, she just wrote a plus sign in front of IGY. Right? It's like, human.
She dug herself that hole. Let's be real.
Yeah, and then she goes, I can't even get a fucking word. Right? Which...
Bad that he's a comedian. What else can I say?
But, you know, like, and then she just wasn't there the next day. When she was there the day after that, they were like, why don't you take a day off, Liz? It was pretty funny. In retrospect, she seems so old. She's probably like 27. You know, the point is, losing your shit does not make you hateful, right? It's if you do that calmly, like my teachers did, right? I wouldn't tell a story about a teacher just really losing it, because that would be different. It would feel different. And it wouldn't feel like I was being singled out. It would feel like they were just right next to the road. But these teachers were just like, you're the fucking problem. And, like, sometimes I feel guilty even bringing this up. I'm in a really successful position now. But I also think it's important for someone in my position to be saying these things. And that's why the book is moving people who are in very successful positions to be like, yeah, we're in this position. And it was still really hard. You know, so what's it like if you didn't have the various supports that we ended up getting in some way? Or whatever skills were available, right? Because we all have some skills that made us go to school in some way. Because if you don't get through school, the results for people with neurodivergence, especially people of color, are disastrous. You know? And so anyway, that's a fun conversation. We'll send this to them now and see what they think.
Can't wait to blow this up.
I think the moral of the story for the people on the podcast is just to educate yourselves, and the moral of the story in real life is that it's important, that, as me as a, with academic training, that's why the research that's really centered on our humanity is really important, and that's why academic research, as a noise that get with it, is important, because it will trickle down to society, and if the shit trickles down, a regular person's just going to read the headline in the Washington Post that's like third hand from the research study.
Yeah.
And I don't even blame the regular person for seeing that headline. If they're not, if it's not part of their daily life, I'm sure I do that for things that I don't know anything about. Because I can't be curious about everything. I care about this, but like, there are things where I don't know shit. And I read the third hand headline. I'm like, oh, okay. Because I don't have time. And so the problem is when you have a platform, you can't be doing that. So educate yourselves. But for the regular people, that's why the institution putting stuff out there is important. That's why, you know, I don't know. That's why it's important for them to listen to us. But I think there are a lot more of us out there than they even realize. A lot more of us out there who hear what they're saying about us, and a lot more of us out there who've had the experience, not this particular experience, but it's just weren't diagnosed, but to just not understand why things don't make sense to us. And I can tell you, if you're listening to this, and you haven't been in that position, if you truly can't understand why people are treating you the way they're treating you. I can't tell you. I'm not saying it's worse than knowing why they treat you bad. It's just different. But it's a bewildering experience. And to be in that position for decades. Really, for me, it was like 1992 to like 2021. Right? So literally 29 years. Well, because before that I was so young, but it's something I'm going to be thinking about for the next several decades. So, all right, we'll see what they say.
Yeah. Wait, is it pause the recording? Stop the recording.
Okay.
Okay. Wait. Oh, wait, you can't see it. Tattoo. Ooh, you can see it.
Oh.
Is there? That tattoo.
I mean, the video is not being recorded anyway, so.
Yeah.
Alright. Well, it'll be up at midnight, so.
Yeah, I was gonna.
Be awake. You have to post it. I'll send you.